check.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good Wednesday afternoon. Welcome to the... No, it's not Wednesday. It's Tuesday. What am I thinking? Wishing the week away already. Happy to have all of you along with us today. Hope it's nice where you are. I hope all this god-awful weather we've had around, especially the Midwest and Northeast, hope it's all gone. Man, oh man, oh man, what an atrocious week for weather. This is a talk show. You're listening to the Guy James Show. I shouldn't have to remind you that. I have to remind myself of it once in a while. And we would love to have you join us on the program today at 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. Got a good program in store for you today. We've got Mikey Weinstein, he's the founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, author of the new book, With God on Our Side. As many of you might remember, he's the father of the cadet at the Air Force Academy who felt they were being pushed by the fundies out there, that they were taking over the Air Force Academy and forcing people into being fundamentalist Christians, or intimidating them at least. And Mikey, a very outspoken critic of that, will be on the program just a little bit later, at the bottom of this hour. And coming up in the second hour, an old cyber friend of mine, Steve Crockett, who is the co-host of Democratic Talk Radio, and you can visit his site at democrattalkradio.com, and Steve will be with us right at the top of the second hour today. How you doing today? No shortage of news, as always. My God, does it ever let up? I yearn for the old days when we came home after a day's work and sat down with Walter Cronkite after dinner and watched the news at 6:30 until 7 o'clock, and that was pretty much it. Maybe you watched 11 o'clock local news as well, and that was pretty much it for news of the day. And now, and I guess I can't complain because it's my own fault. I don't have to listen to it. I don't have to watch it, and you don't either. We don't have to be surfing the internet getting every detail of every story, but we do nonetheless. It's like it's some sort of an addiction. Maybe it is. I don't know. But we do feel an intense desire to be, I guess, over-informed on every detail. This horrible tragedy that took place at Virginia Tech yesterday is a perfect example. It'll be on the news nonstop for days and days, and if not weeks to come. And we've just, we've just gotten by the Ima story a little bit. Not to compare the two, because there is no comparison. An awful, awful tragedy. And it's, what was it? I guess they're calling it the worst one-man shooting spree in our history. And it's a tragedy. A tragedy of major proportions. And we get so jaded in today's society, don't you think? There's so much death and destruction on the news, and so many human tragedies all around the world, that I think we get jaded and we get somewhat immune to it. After all, there's 33 people dead. I think 32 of them innocent of this whole thing. And what an awful story that is. And you know, we're sad. We're angry. I know many of us are just mystified as to why these things happen. And we can't seem to prevent them, no matter what we do. I do believe that security against such a thing would be impossible. But even before the facts came to light yesterday, we had people trying to politicize the event. And the NRA people were saying, see, if the students had been armed, they could have prevented this. One of them could have shot the guy. And the anti-gun people were saying, well, you know, if there were good enough gun control laws, it wouldn't have happened in the first place. And my own opinion, somehow I don't think a campus full of students packing firearms is such a good idea. I'm not a gun grabber. I never have been. I've not owned a gun. I'm not a hunter. Even though I'm a country boy, born and raised a country boy, I'm not a hunter, and I don't see the thrill of it, and I don't understand it, but it's okay with me if you go out and hunt game, and you eat the game, and you do it for that, and not for the sport of killing. But that's just my personal story. So I'm not a gun grabber. I like trap shooting. I think there's, you know, great enjoyment to be had by some of that, but then they have these automatic weapons, and weapons all too available for people that should not have them. And I don't know what the answer is. I'm not even pretending to be wise enough to have an answer to that question. We mourn the loss of these young lives. It's yet another day in our history that we'll never forget. And there are getting to be too many of those days in our history that we'll never forget. Days that you remember where you were. I see where Bush attended the memorial service for the murdered students. And yet he failed to attend over 3,000 services for our fallen men and women in uniform. I didn't expect him to attend all 3,000 of them, but I thought a decent representation would have been something the President of the United States should have done. I guess it's one of those things, if they can't stand behind him during a press conference or be used as audiences for his grandstanding, then they aren't much use to him. And I think that brings me to my main point here now. This is an unspeakable tragedy, this whole thing. And it will linger with us forever, along with the events like, and just things in recent memory that I can think of. You know, the events at Waco and Ruby Ridge and Oklahoma City, 9/11. And to some of our older folks listening to the program, December 7th, 1941, there are many significant days that people will never forget. People that I was reminded today that lived down in the coal mine country, where some of the terrible mine disasters have taken place, they have days that they mourn their losses. It's a human thing to do. But where's the mourning for the events like this that are taking place almost every day in Iraq? More citizens than this, and that's to take nothing away from the terrible tragedy this is. But more citizens than this are being murdered almost every single day in Baghdad alone. And there's no public outcry from most of the people of the United States. I ask again, a question I often ask, are we somehow better than other people, and that our lives are worth more than theirs? Are we? Why can't we come to an agreement that on this planet, where human life is concerned, we're all one people. Red, yellow, black, white, rich, poor, we're all one species. We're human. All of our lives matter. And yet we don't grieve except for those who are part of our own particular geographic or ethnic or religious group. When are we going to realize that all men and women and children on this planet deserve dignity and respect, a decent life? Why are we able to almost totally block out or discount the misery and the suffering of the people in Iraq and Darfur and other desperate peoples of the earth? I guess my main question here is, when are we going to be truly civilized? When are we going to start caring about life, human life on this planet, no matter where it is, no matter who it is, no matter what race or gender, ethnic group, religious group, the color of their skin? When are we going to care equally about all the peoples on this planet? You know, this planet really isn't that big. When you look at the grand scheme of things, it isn't that big at all. And there is tremendous suffering. And there seems to be a disconnect by so many people. And we only want to notice the awful things when it happens to somebody closer to us. And that's one of the real tragedies of this whole thing. Yes, we'll remember yesterday forever. A horrible, horrible thing to happen in America. But the thing is, it's a horrible thing to happen any place on earth, and it regularly happens in places like Baghdad, like I've mentioned before, and yet so many of us are able to turn a blind eye to that. Why? Why are we like that? I don't know. I haven't the answer for that. I hope you'll give us a call at 866-546-5254. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg.
I wanted to comment on this, too. First of all, I think you make a very good point. You know, if you compare what happened in Virginia, and again, not in any way diminishing from the terrible suffering there, and you look at something in Iraq, I mean, on average, every day, you know, there are 60-something deaths in Iraq, okay? And then when you hear people from the Bush administration say, oh, look at the good things, we're paving roads, we're painting schools, do you think you can go to Virginia today and say, well, you know, we were paving roads yesterday in that town, and it's great? I mean, it wouldn't be acceptable at all, you know. And I think that we as a nation, the first step to being, you know, less desensitized to these things is realizing the suffering of other people in other countries, you know. And it's how we plan our presence in our military strategy. It's how we look at our effect on other countries in terms of global warming, because certain countries, their entire water supply is going to disappear. So I think we as a country have to look at being more humane, not just to people in our own country, but in our policy to other people, because I think what happens is that people see this violence in other countries, think, oh, it's no problem, it doesn't affect me, and then we become, you know, even more desensitized to violence.
You know, I agree with everything you said. If only we as a human species could have a greater sense of community amongst all of us on this planet. You know, when you look at creation as we know it, we're but a grain of sand in the Sahara Desert as to what we know in the galaxies and outer space, and so we're such a small little group here on this planet, and yet there is a disconnect from one country to another, from one race to another, one religion to another. And it's hard to understand. We look at the number, oh, there's 6 billion people on Earth. Yes, there are. But in the grand scheme of things, that's not that much humanity, really.
Right. And, you know, the other point I wanted to bring up is we have to be, there are certain people who, as you said, are making a political agenda of this. I mean, there were people right away who started coming on saying, you know, I bet it's a Muslim.
Oh, yes.
That, you know. And now, they turned out that the kid who did it, I think he was South Korean, so I don't know how that's going to fit into the right wing's, you know, agenda of things and this and that. But, I mean, we have to remember, too, that, you know, we had some terrible tragedies in this country committed by lily white people, including, you know, Klebold and the other kid, Timothy McVeigh, Waco, and the list goes on and on and on. So, you know, we as a country have to look at domestic terrorism as well, by hate groups, by, you know, fringe groups, by radical people who are willing to do whatever. And it's not just, you know, let's blame every Muslim in the world. It's an issue in our country as well, you know, and if we don't look at these things seriously, I think there could be more tragedies like this.
You're exactly right. And there's a well-known blogger, and she's well-known around Fox and CNN, and a woman by the name of Debbie Schlossel.
Yes.
And yesterday, right away on her website, she says, here's what we know about the murder of at least 32 students. The murderer has been identified by law enforcement as a young Asian male. And then she goes on to say the Virginia Tech campus has a very large Muslim community, many of which are from Pakistan. And then Pakis are considered Asian. And these attacks were at least a half a mile apart. And she goes on to say, well, perhaps it was a terrorist by the Muslims. Terrorist act. There you go. I mean, bang, zoom, right off the bat. That's what she came up with, and she looks pretty stupid today. But I'll bet a lot of right wingers are looking at that and go, well, you know, she might have been right. Well,
yeah. And if I could just make one last
sure.
point, you know, I really was disturbed by the Bush administration when, you know, instead of saying the first thing, you know, we're here for families or whatever, they said, you know, we support the right to bear arms. In other words, wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the gun lobby, you know, which is, I think, is a huge problem. And I think, you know, even Giuliani in the past, I think he's now changed, was for gun control. And, you know, the vast majority of law enforcement organizations throughout the country, police and, you know, security agencies, all are for some sort of gun control. I mean, I don't want to take the rights away from any hunter to hunt, you know, if they do so safely and things like that. But a handgun, the sole purpose of it is to kill people. And I understand there's the concept of self-defense and everything like that, but when you can go to a gun show, or, you know, you can just order something, you know, off the internet practically, or just go into a shop with little questions asked and buy a gun, that's asking for disaster. And I know that people kill people, not weapons, but, you know, if you compare the instances here in the United States compared to, say, France or Germany or Japan or whatever, it's like exponentially more.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, this country, in regards to handgun murders and murders of this type, is a slaughterhouse compared to many other countries around the world, civilized countries, developed countries around the world. And you know, you're right about the administration and the right example. And I hate to bring politics into this, but this is one of these deals where needless death like these, you've got people saying, well, on the right, they'll say, well, in Iraq, this proves when we have needless deaths, we need more troops. And in Virginia, when this happens, it proves we need more guns at home.
Yeah.
So that's always the answer. That's always the answer. Let's kill them.
So anyway, that was my 2 cents for the day. So thank you.
Well, that was a lot more than 2 cents worth. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're talking about the tragedy that happened at one of the nation's great universities yesterday. I don't know how many of you have been to Blacksburg. Oh, geez, it's a pretty place. Gorgeous place in Virginia. I think it's one of the prettiest college towns that you'll find. And Virginia Tech's not all that big of a university. It's, what, only 25,000, 26,000, and only about 9,000 of them live on the campus. But it's a nice campus, and it's just a terrible tragedy. But once again, I do wish that everybody would sit back and contemplate this, not just as something that's happened in this country, not just another event that we'll remember every day for the rest of our lives. And there, like I said before, there are getting to be far too many of those days. We think of the Challenger blowing up, and things have just happened in our short lives. And our lives are very short. Very short. We're but a blip on the screen as to the age of the earth and all of creation. But it's just another example of something that goes wrong in the mind of somebody that's lost their mind. And again, I don't think there's a thing we can do about it. I will hear calls now for, you know, the metal detectors at every door and more campus police, and they'll crucify the president of that great university. And when you know all the facts, there's not a lot that could have been done. It's a big, big campus on something like, what, 2,600 acres. You can't. It's like a small city. You can't go in and lock down a small city on a moment's notice, an hour's notice, 2 hours' notice. You can't do it. They didn't have enough people to do it. So, lay off of him already. My God, who would expect? What university president or chancellor would expect something like this to happen at this university? How could you prepare for it? You can't. It can't be done. So I hope people will back off of that. I've heard a lot of that so far, people calling for the president's head and so forth. It's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. If you have some thoughts on the subject, give us a call, 866-546-5254. We're going to pause for a short break, and we'll be back. And you're welcome to give us a call, 866-546-5254.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
And now a message from the President of the United States. George W. Bush.
Good morning. Recently, I had the good fortune of speaking with the National Cattlemen's Association about the important matters of our country. Over a plate of delicious dry rub ribs, the ranchers shared their wisdom with me about cattling, barbecues, and the Iraq War. First, I now believe our troops are eating far too much chicken. From now on, it's beef for every meal. Did you know there's a beef bacon? I didn't know this, and our troops are going to be enjoying these delicious salted strips of meat every morning from this point forward. The cattlemen also pointed out to me that the uniforms our troops wear contain alarmingly low amounts of genuine cow leather. No wonder morale is low. Starting tomorrow, our brave fighting men and women are going to be clothed in the finest cowhide fatigues, jackets, helmets, boots, and of course, body armor. Finally, our troops are going to be armed with the latest in high-tech beef weaponry. Instead of bayonets, our troops are going to stab the enemy with a Texas Longhorn at the end of a gun. And with the addition of other advances from cow science to our arsenal, such as state-of-the-art cowpine mines and new smart missiles, or as the scientists call them, moosiles, we're going to bring a swift and proud victory to Iraq. Thank you for listening, and God bless you.
Guy James back with you here in the Guy James Show. We're going to have Mikey Weinstein with us at the bottom of the hour. A great speaker. By the way, if you've not heard Mikey Weinstein, you're in for a treat. You really are. Guy knows what he's talking about. He's a Republican, by the way. Don't let that fool you when you hear him talk about the subject he's going to talk about today. And how odd that I didn't really plan it this way, but my wife and I attended a meeting last night where a gentleman spoke from the ACLU and talked about the religious freedom in this country. and an attempt by the Christian Coalition to bring Bibles into the schools, and you know the whole story. And it's an effort that met with some displeasure here in this, in our area, our heavily red area that we live in here. And the school in Collier County, that's Naples, Florida, actually approved them passing out Bibles and so forth. But then the ACLU got involved and brought it to a peaceable end. And the good thing about it was the attorneys for the school board, they didn't have to litigate the thing. They sat down and talked about it. And the school board, especially their, well, not the school board, but their attorney, their school attorney, did understand that they were breaking the law. And so it ended up good. I don't know. Some of the situation is still going on. But went and listened to that whole affair last night and have a good understanding of how the ACLU feels about that. And here we are today, going to have Mikey on just a little while. And, yes, his name is Mikey. Mikey, remember the Mikey from the commercials? He likes it. He likes it. Might give it to Mikey. Well, Mike... Officially Michael, but he goes by Mikey, and he's one very, very strong speaker, so you'll enjoy that. I see that the Justice Department just happened to miss the deadline from yesterday, the 2 p.m. deadline to turn over the documents that were requested by the House Judiciary Committee. What will come of that? What will... John Conyers is the head of the House Judiciary Committee. What will they do about it? These were subpoenas, after all. Is this contempt of Congress? What will happen? And, yes, of course, the Senate judiciary hearings were postponed today. And with respect to the Virginia Tech murders... And so Gonzalez will have a couple extra days to practice his testimony. Did you ever hear anything so ridiculous? They say he's been practicing nonstop day and night for days now in order to keep himself from getting crossed up and lying some more when he gets in front of Congress, because he knows his ass is he's in trouble. He's in trouble. If he slips up, he's going to convict himself of perjury. That's what it's going to be. But here he is. Isn't it a terrible thing when the chief lawmaker of the entire country, the attorney general, the number one lawmaker in the country, openly and with public knowledge, has to practice his testimony in front of Congress for, what, 10 days now? First of all, is he that unintelligent? Secondly, is his memory that poor? Third, is he that bad of a liar? And I guess the question is now is not if he's a liar, but how much of a liar is he? I guess that's like saying you're a little bit pregnant. We shall see on Thursday. I'm sure that's going to be a very tough time for him. Very tough time for him. And I hope it is. It's not something that's meaningless. Not at all. Hey, it's tax day for a lot of folks, and we're going to leave you with this here for the next couple of minutes, and we'll be back with our guest.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small?
And we're back here on the Guy James Show. Welcome to everybody. Glad to have all of you along with us. And as promised, I have Mikey Weinstein on the phone. He's the founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation and co-author, along with David C., with the new book, With God on Our Side. Mikey, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Guy. It's a pleasure to be here.
We've had you on before, but it's been some time ago. So I was reading excerpts from your book. It is most interesting, and I know some of our listeners are not completely familiar with your whole story and involvement in this. So if you would just take a moment and let our listeners know where you're coming from and that you're not some hippie, anti-religious, anti-military nut.
Well, no, I mean, and again, I could wax Seinfeldian and say not that there really would be anything wrong with that.
That's right.
I'm a registered Republican. I spent a little over 3 years in the Reagan White House as one of President Reagan's attorneys. My family has three consecutive generations of military academy graduates in it, and over 120 years of combined active duty military service from every combat engagement from in my immediate family, from every combat engagement from World War One to the current so-called global war on terror. My youngest son, God willing, will graduate from the Air Force Academy next month, and he's the sixth member of my family to go there. So I know that the religious right that I'm fighting would love for me to be, I guess, classified as a Northern California, I don't know, guy, Chardonnay-sipping, Sierra Club member, Democrat, bleeding heart liberal, but, I'm not.
That would make it a lot more convenient for him.
It would be, but it's, my job is not to make things convenient for them, and basically, I come to your listeners today with kind of the gun smoke in my face. I'm a man at war, and in fact, the book's name, of course, is With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military. And, it's everywhere. Borders, Barnes & Noble, it's on Amazon. But the book was meant to be a primal scream. For instance, the current governor of New York, Eliot Spitzer, is fond of saying, Guy, that you can't change the world by whispering. And that's why my book is meant to be that scream. And basically, I am not at war with Christianity, and I'm not at war with evangelical Christianity. We have many fundamentalist evangelical Christians that support what we're doing. I am at war with a small subset of evangelical Christianity that goes by a long technical name, and I promise during the show today I'll just say it once. It's called premillennial, dispensational, reconstructionist, dominionist, fundamentalist evangelical Christianity, or just dominionist Christians. And they're about 12.6% of the population, and they believe that they have essentially an unlimited right to push their particular biblical worldview, the gospel of Jesus Christ, irrespective of time and place, whether you're in an employer or employer relationship, or in my case, in a military superior to military subordinate relationship. That's not only un-American, it's not only against the Constitution and illegal, it's to the point now where it's really constituting a national security threat to our country internally, every bit as much as that which is presented externally by Al-Qaeda.
And the dominionists you're talking about are the Falwell type, the Dobsons,
yeah,
the Robertsons, maybe.
Right. Yeah, none of those guys have called me many names. I think it's likely that we're probably never going to be going out to dinner together. In fact, a week from today, it's going to be a little bit like the gunfight at the OK Corral. This is in fact, you're the first show I've mentioned this on. It just happened a couple of hours ago. There's going to be a showdown between Pat Robertson's lawyer, Jay Sekulow, and myself at the Air Force Academy, a debate that's going to probably attract thousands. And so we're going to each bring our hammer and tongs. We're going to crawl into the wing, into the ring, and one of us will crawl out.
Wow, that would be, how long has that been set up? That's going to be interesting.
It started about we got the final word on it about 90 minutes ago.
Mikey, when did this? I have a theory on when this started. That this dominionism you're talking about and this problem within our schools, and I was just telling our audience, I was at a meeting last night where a gentleman from the ACLU spoke, and they're very concerned about junior high students. This is where the Christian Coalition and those folks are trying to strike hardest in this country. But I happen to think that this problem really started in the universities back when the draft ended. What do you think about
Well, Guy, I got to tell you, I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of journalists, and you were the first one to hit the nail on the head, and I mean that.
Well, it's just the demographics of it.
Basically, no, you're right. The fork in the stream, if you will, the rock, dividing the stream, the confluence of what's been happening in our national history, I think occurred in 1972, when we had involuntary servitude, or if you will, the draft, ended. Because with the draft, we were pulling not just from red states, but also from blue states, as we now call them. And, you know, at least in theory, we were getting people from all over the country, and a lot of them were coming in and they were pissed off. And when you're pissed off, you're not going to so easily take, you know, a spoonful of sugar makes the Jesus go down. And I think with the ending of conscription, that this began to happen because we pull inordinately from red states where there's this mixture of a certain type of biblical worldview. And you remember now, I'm the founder of a foundation, a nonprofit. I left my high-paying job with Ross Perot, and, you know, I founded the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. And we're on the web at www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org. And, you know, our job, we're the only organization out there that focuses with laser-like precision where all the nukes are. And in other words, yes, junior high schools and high schools are important, and not having creches, and manger scenes, you know, in front of a public building or in a public building, I think that's all nice and important. And not teaching teaching intelligent design, but teaching evolution is important. But ultimately, if we lose the United States Marine Corps, Navy, Army, and Air Force, and I'm telling you right now that this is not Al Gore and an Inconvenient Truth where we're at a so-called tipping point guy, you know, as we are with global warming. We've tipped right now in the technologically most lethal organization ever created by humankind, which is our honorable and our noble U.S. Marine Corps, Army, Navy, and Air Force. The constitutionally mandated wall separating church and state, or if you will, guy, supernatural and natural, I'm sad to report, is nothing but smoke and debris. And in human history, whenever that has occurred in the past, we've not ended up with little creeks, ponds, streams, and rivers. We've ended up with oceans and oceans of blood.
Yes, yes. With the Air Force Academy, was this a concentrated indoctrination process at the Academy, or was it part of Bush's faith-based initiative, or was it just part of a band of military leaders who felt it was their duty to kind of, as they like to say, harvest souls for Jesus?
Well, let me put it this way. I thought when I first found out about it is when Mel Gibson came out with his movie in February of 2004. I forget the name. I think it was The Jesus Chainsaw Massacre or Freddy versus Jesus. You know, I wasn't really happy with that movie. I found out not from my three kids who were then at the Air Force Academy, but from, you know, Christian members of the faculty saying, who are not evangelical, saying, do you know what's happening here? And I thought that this was might have been an isolated, you know, little spot that somebody catches on a lung, you know, while doing an MRI or something. The stories, we could go all day on this, but little things. I began to find out that, for instance, the most popular joke at the Air Force Academy in 2004 was, why did Jews make the best magicians? Do you know the answer to that one, Guy?
No. I wasn't aware that they did make the best musicians, but I bet you got the answer.
Yeah, magicians.
Magicians,
like
yeah.
Apparently, Jews make the best magicians because they have the magical ability to walk into a red brick building and come out the smokestacks in a puff of smoke. That was the most popular joke that's going on there. Cadets were being told that the Holocaust was the just comeuppance for having, you know, been for they and their people, Jewish cadets, you know, having been completely, you know, complicit in the execution of Jesus Christ.
Comeuppance.
There were brown bag lunches being put on, attended by many, many, many senior officers. With flyers saying, do not take this flyer down. This is an officially sponsored Air Force Academy activity. Today's brown bag lunch topic, why we cannot let you have your God while we have ours. Look, I can't make this stuff up.
Ooh.
I can go on and on. The bottom line is, I thought it might have been isolated to the Academy. And if anyone today, if you can just remember, you know, one thing on the Guy James Show, here's your metric. Two numbers to remember, 737 and 132, 737 and 132. We now have 737 U.S. military installations that the Pentagon acknowledges. It's really closer to 1,000 as we garrison the planet, strewn about in 132 countries around the world. And on every one of them now, we have an officer's Christian fellowship for the officers and a Christian military fellowship for the enlisted. And their goals, and of all these members, officers and enlisted, is a three-part goal. They're completely unabashed about it, and it's a goal that they consider much higher than the oath they took. They swore an oath to support and defend, protect and preserve the Constitution of the United States. The first goal is they want to see a, quote, spiritually transformed U.S. military. Goal number two, with ambassadors for Christ, Guy, in uniform. Goal number three, empowered by the Holy Spirit. Yet here we have a military where, for instance, in 1997, the Air Force adopted a core value, not a peripheral value, not guidance, core value, saying that religion is a matter of individual conscience. All military professionals, and especially commanders, must never take it upon themselves to try to change or coercively influence the religious views of others. And yet we have the reigning Air Force Chaplain of the Year in the summer of 2004 ordering 700 cadets, after going to a fire and brimstone lecture, to go and get in the faces of their classmates, demand to know their religious faith. If they're not born-again Christians, they were ordered to be evangelized on the spot, and if they refused that evangelization, they were ordered to be told that you will burn, for that apostasy, you will burn eternally in the fires of hell.
Not knowing who that was that the Cecil, Brigadier General Cecil Richardson?
No, but I'm glad you mentioned that. That was actually Major Warren Watteath. But where was America? Where were all the listeners of the Guy James Show on Tuesday, July 12th, 2005, when on the front page of the newspaper, most reviled by the Pentagon, and everyone, I hope you're collectively saying the answer, which is the New York Times, the number two ranking general in the Air Force Chaplain's Corps, Guy just mentioned his name, Brigadier General Cecil R. Richardson, made the unbelievable statement on a paper hostile to the Pentagon, so you know the Pentagon had to okay the statement, that it was now the Air Force's official policy to reserve its right to evangelize anyone it determines to be unchurched, quote unquote. Well, my wife and I, having three kids in the Air Force, raised our hands and said, excuse me, Air Force, excuse me. Do our kids fall on this Richard Nixon era, quote, you know, enemies list of being, quote, unchurched? And if so, are you or are you not? We demand to know. Are you going to, you know, exercise your reserve right to evangelize them? By the way, how do you think that plays to Al-Qaeda, the now resurgent Taliban, the insurrectionists, the jihadists, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah's Hezbollah, Hamas, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, Islamic Jihad, Ayman al-Zawahiri? How do you think this plays to our enemies?
Well,
do you think it helps that we have an attack F-16 squadron guy? I can't make it up. The 523rd Attack F-16 Fighter Squadron, crew Satyrs, and their official patch, Air Force patch, on their airplane, in their squadron, on their flight suit, a giant crucifix with a giant helmet from the 11th century, a Crusader's helmet, and a broadsword. The helmet is surrounded by three yellow stars in the shape of a cross for the Trinity. Now, you tell me, is there anything we could possibly do to be acting as an accelerant or lubricant to increase the numbers of, make it easier for angry young Islamic men and women in Jordan and Syria and Lebanon and Egypt to want to come and join the cause to fight us? I mean, do we need to be emboldening our enemy, an enemy that we surely must fight? Do we have to strengthen them? I mean, everyone knows the Yankees and Red Sox hate each other. What if Joe Torre, the manager of the Yankees, 2 days before he took the Yankees into a four-game set down at Fenway, called the mothers of the Red Sox players all whores? You think that might change the balance of motivation a little bit?
Yeah, just a tad. Well, let me be a devil's advocate here for a minute, Mikey. So what? I mean, everybody knows this is a Christian nation. We've got God we trust on our money. Other countries around the world, including these Muslim groups that you're talking about, they know we're a Christian nation. So what? Why is this going to cause any stir?
Well, it won't cause any stir if you believe in Paul Bunyan and if you believe in Bigfoot and if you believe in the Easter Bunny. Yeah, that is absolutely a blood libel, and it's a felony against democracy to call ourselves a Christian nation. I mean, the best example is the very first major international treaty that this – of course, the religious right is always appropriating Americana and trying to rewrite history in an amazing way, and people just believe it because they see it in somebody's book. But it's incontrovertible that in 1797, the Treaty of Tripoli was signed. The first major international treaty by the United States was negotiated by George Washington, and the U.S. Senate unanimously ratified it. It was signed by the second president, John Adams. And, you know, it's, of course, Tripoli is an Islamic nation. You know, it's where Libya is, an Islamic territory. And the treaty started out right at the first sentence. The government of the United States of America, Guy, is not to be considered in any sense, you know, founded upon the Christian faith. We are a spiritual people. That's great. But you know what? We also have 29.5 million atheists in this country. The people who formed this country were so critical about how important this was that it wasn't just, you know, the religious right would like you to believe, just like Catherine Harris in Florida tried to get you to believe, and that this is actually a plank in the Texas Republican policy statement they have, that they're trying to dispel the belief in the myth of the separation of church and state. You know, so just leave that First Amendment, which is in the Bill of Rights, for a second, and just go to the body of the Constitution itself. Our founding fathers were so prescient, so brilliant, that they actually put a statement in Clause 3, Article 6, that even most lawyers have forgotten, that states that we will, quote, never have a religion test for any position in the federal government. So when we have Falwell and Robertson and the others putting out bumper stickers saying, vote Christian, you tell me how that isn't subordinating or trying to encourage sedition and treason.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Those boys are not high up on my list. Speaking about guys that are not high up on my list, is it a coincidence that we're talking about Colorado Springs here, and by the way, I understand that Mr. Haggard and you had a little tete-a-tete going, and he threw up the email conversation on the internet without your approval?
Right. I mean, I'd had a series of dust-ups with this man, who I consider to be one of the most wretched combinations of duplicity and heartlessness and zealousness in one human being. We had an email exchange in December of 2005, I guess it was. And without telling me, you're always prepared for something again when you write something on the internet to be, go out to the press, particularly if you're in a national situation like I am. But he doctored it up, put it on the internet, and then it was such a bunch of a load of garbage that I said, look, I boxed at the Air Force Academy. You said you're a former high school football player. Let's just go three rounds in the ring, and we'll do it all for charity. Half the money can go to the Christian Children's Fund and half the United Jewish Appeal. But he was too much of a coward to fight me. And of course, now I think he's a little bit gone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's rehabilitated, you know.
And also, you know what they say is that there's the old saying that if a parent catches their teenager smoking out behind the garage, a smart parent will sit there and make the teenager smoke the entire pack. Now that's exactly how the religious right quote cured Ted Haggard in 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, it worked for me with my uncle. I'll tell you that story sometime. David Iglesias, I have to ask you this. You live in New Mexico, or you do a lot of your business in Mexico. I'm not sure if you reside there or not. But
I do. I live in Albuquerque.
Did you not have David Iglesias backing on this?
Yeah, Dave lives about 4 minutes from me. He and his beautiful wife, Cindy, and their beautiful 4 daughters, a wonderful family. Dave is a diehard right-wing, Republican and a devout fundamentalist evangelical Christian who from the beginning has backed everything I've done. In fact, when I first went up for my first meeting at the Academy, those 40 months ago, he took out of his pocket, we go to lunch every week, we have for years, he gave me a pocket bill of rights, and he took out a yellow highlighter guy, kid you not, and he highlighted the First Amendment. He said, give this to General Rosa, who at the time was the head of the Air Force Academy. He's now the head of the Citadel in South Carolina. And he said, tell him, Mikey, how you and I may disagree about things religiously and politically, but how close we are and friends, and tell him I'm the U.S. attorney down here. He's also a Navy reserve JAG. If you saw the movie with Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise, A Few Good Men, he was the Tom Cruise character in real life. And David has been a complete supporter because this is not about taking anybody's warm, cuddly Jesus teddy bear away. We're just saying that, look, military, my fight, we're not a complex meal guy. We're not Chateaubriand. We're a hamburger. We're just saying that there are a zillion times you can spread the gospel, even this weaponized gospel of Jesus Christ that I don't like. You can legally do it in the military. We have thousands of chapels, thousands of chaplains. I was married in the largest university cathedral in the world, the Air Force Academy's chapel. But there are going to be sometimes you can't do it, and the military is going to be at least constrained to the same degree that a shift manager is at Starbucks or Wendy's or Walgreens. If you want to see a Fortune 1000 CEO guy brought to his or her knees, have the most junior employee in the mailroom who's been there one day raise their hand saying, stop, I'm calling my lawyer, I'm being witnessed to and evangelized during the workday. That's a killer lawsuit. It's a direct violation of Title VII of the U.S. Code, even without specific intent, disparate treatment versus disparate impact. But in the military, that's not just your shift manager. That's your military superior. In the military, sexual intercourse with someone other than your spouse, adultery is still punishable as a felony. I've tried and defended those cases. In the military, if you're ordered to go to the base dentist at 4 p.m. and you don't go, it's a felony. In the military, we actually have regulations prohibiting superiors up and down the chain of command for fear of the, quote, draconian specter of command influence from pushing by name Tupperware, Mary Kay Cosmetics, and Amway on subordinates.
Oh.
Because even in
Tupperware.
The U.S. military, yes, even if you're being gently evangelized in the U.S. military, gently and sensitively and respectfully and tolerantly by your military superior, get out of my face, sir or ma'am, is simply not an option for you.
Well, I hate to bring up the word, and a lot of people think it's extreme to bring up the word, but fascism, and we all know what Sinclair Lewis wrote about it, and I forget who made this statement, when fascism comes to America, it'll be wrapped in a flag.
Absolutely. In 1935, Sinclair Lewis wrote the book, It Can't Happen Here. He was the first American to be a Nobel laureate in literature. He went over to Nazi Germany to continue the story you brought up in 1939 to observe it for a few months, came back to America, and of course he was like a rock star because he was finally, we had an American who won the Nobel Prize in literature, and they said, what did you see over there? And he said, let me tell you something, not if, but when fascism comes to our shores in America, it'll be wrapped in the American flag carrying a cross. And do you know that 14 years later, almost to the day, Douglas MacArthur, in the midst of that statement that Lewis made was in 39, in the midst of the Cold War, 13 years later, almost to the day, Douglas MacArthur said that, quote, symbology is very important for our American fighting men. He didn't say women back then. That and the two most important symbols to our American military are the cross and the flag, because they teach us how to die and how to live.
Hmm. Well, Mikey, who's winning this battle? And moreover, has the unpopularity of the war and the president himself in the red states, has that tempered this evangelical fundamentalist zeal at all?
You know, it's very hard to say, because I think that it, some of the – I have many, many moles in the Pentagon. You know, many of my classmates, other friends, I mean, you know, my family has such a long military tradition. These people are terrified to come out and come out in public. But they've made it clear to me, and I believe it, that we are really not at the highest levels. We are not in what's referred to as the AOR, or the area of responsibility, Afghanistan or Iraq, for any reasons involving, you know, geopolitical aspects and a focus, even oil. We're there to bring about the realization of the book of Revelations, which is a great five-part passion play. Of course, you know, you talk about bloodletting and the blood running hip deep. You know, and of course, the Jewish people disappear in part four, because no Jews get to go to heaven. All Jews are either forcibly converted or thrown into the lake of fire. And the irony is, of the 4,000, at least 4,000 plus honorable sailors, soldiers, Marines, and airmen that have come to our foundation, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, again on the web at militaryreligiousfreedom.org, for help, get this, 96% are Christian. Roughly 3/4 traditional Protestants, guy, 1/4 Roman Catholic. The other 4 or 5% will be Jewish, Islamic, Buddhist, Hindu, atheist, agnostic, what have you. This is basically dominionist evangelical Christians praying, P-R-A-Y and P-R-E-Y, on non-evangelical Christians, telling them, you know what, you may think you're a Christian, you're not Christian enough in our book, and as a result, you're going to burn eternally in the fires of hell, along with the Jews.
You know, this reminds me of when I was a kid, and some of our listeners will identify with this. I'm of the Christian faith. And when I was a young kid, we'd go to Sunday school and have to go to church on Wednesday evening. And on Wednesday evening, they'd always have a guest speaker come in, some fire-breathing preacher of some sort, and they would have what's called is an altar call. And, you know, your Sunday school teacher would always come and intimidate you and going down to these, and you felt like, I know the feeling of these people who are being intimidated and coerced and so forth, and I'm Christian. And I still understand the feelings of why you would not be want to be put in an uncomfortable position like that.
You know, it's a, there's a famous saying that is very true, and that's that, you know, you can, at the end of the day, in the middle part of the day, in the beginning part of the day, here's a basic aspect of human life. Certitude in the afterlife appears to be completely incompatible with tolerance and respect in this life. And that is, and, yeah. And again, it's perfectly fine if you want to do something on your own time. It's we have so many chaplains. I mean, whatever happened to Father Mulcahy and MASH? I mean,
yes.
that's the kind of, but now today's chaplains and many of the commanders view the troops as a missionary field, the way Americans went to the Hawaiian Islanders to convert them in the 1820s. And as I said before, it's not that I condemn the religious right for trying to invade the state to make this happen. That's the dynamic tension we have in a democracy. I mean, Soren Kierkegaard said, hey, you know, anxiety is the dizziness of freedom. So that's fine. I'm not trying to say we can't have anxiety. But when the state cooperates and allows itself to be engaged, whenever you engage the machinery of the state to push a particular biblical worldview, it's unconstitutional, it's illegal, and it usually ends up in a massacre.
Yes. No.
And it's not just the Holocaust, and it's not just the nine crusades, you know, or the Inquisition. There are so many of the other spaces in between that happen, and we've had many Holocausts and many Inquisitions for individual members of the military, and it's just not, it takes a lot of power to, you know, a lot of bravery and courage to speak truth to power when you're looking in the face of a military commander or someone who outranks you and says, you have to stop doing this to me.
Yes, yes, indeed. You've got another commencement coming, another graduation coming up soon with your son, right?
Yes.
And I want to tell everybody about the book. There's a picture of the hands. You want to tell them about the hands?
Yes, the photographer.
Great picture.
I think it's called something like a circle of Academy rings. You know, my brother-in-law, my brother, my father, my daughter-in-law, my two sons. You know, we all have a picture of our rings in a circle, taken from, you know, just with in the I guess we're making a fist, and our rings are forming kind of like a circle. And there's a lot of symbology there, because our family is very proud of our both our Christian and our Jewish faith. Half my family's Christian. I have evangelicals in that half whose last name is Christian.
Your wife is Christian, right?
My wife was born and raised a Presbyterian. She converted to Judaism shortly after we got married. All right. Couldn't have cared less. It was a choice she made. But my daughter-in-law is a Christian who was asked by the Commandant of Cadets at the Academy to go out and harvest other non-Christians and bring them to Ted Haggard's Easter time passion play at the New Life Church. You know, you talk about the difference there. So, yeah, our family is we are proud of our Jewish and Christian roots. We are proud of our and if we had atheists that we were aware of, we'd be proud of them too. Because, you know, I'm not an atheist. I'm not a Jew. I'm not a Christian. At the end of the day, the most important thing to me is that I'm an American, because that's what this country is all about.
Absolutely. With God on Our Side, by Mikey Weinstein and David C., a great read. I'm not all the way through it yet, but mostly. A great read. And Mikey, it's available just about everywhere, right?
Yes, it's on Amazon. It's at Barnes & Noble and Borders. And it's there's another book with a similar name, so you have to remember that. It's With God on Our Side, and then : One Man's War Against the Evangelical Coup in America's Military. It's a quick read. It's a shocking read, and it's something that, you know, at this point, I can quote Martin Luther King, there comes a time when silence actually becomes betrayal. And for the listeners of the Guy James Show today, please, please don't be silent anymore.
Mikey Weinstein, thank you so much for being on the program today. I can tell by the email and chat room and everything here that people are loving this interview, and I thank you so much for giving us great insight into this. Thank you.
Well, my pleasure. It was a wonderful interview. You do a great job. And to all the listeners, thank you for, whether you agree or disagree, thank you for being my brother and sister American.
Thank you. Mikey Weinstein, always a great interview. I think it's the third time we've had him on the program. The guy's absolutely eloquent. He is well-spoken. He's highly intelligent. What better can you say about it? And he's a Republican and spouted the views that you just heard. And the views that are entirely appropriate, in my opinion, and I completely agree with everything you said. I have great respect for Mikey Weinstein. And head on over to that website. It's militaryreligiousfreedomfoundation.org. Militaryreligiousfreedomfoundation.org. Check it out. You'll be very, very glad you did. And I think Mikey is he might have some interviews that he's done, or a couple of his speaking engagements on there. I'm not sure, but he's a great speaker. I understand that he goes out and does quite a bit of speaking, and I've talked to people that have been fortunate enough to be in venues where he's spoken to rather large gatherings, and he's an impressive figure. I could be wrong. I should have asked him. I'm thinking that he was a JAG at one time. And as he mentioned, he was in the Reagan White House as one of the attorneys. So this is no guy that they can, like he mentioned to open up the show, one of the Northern California Chardonnay-sipping, hippie, dope-smoking lefties. This is the last guy in the world that they can accuse of that. So a guy that when he talks carries tremendous weight with what he says, and I'm ever so thankful to have had him on the program once again. We try our best to get good interviews for you. And coming up after the break, we're going to have Steve Crockett. He's an old cyber friend of ours, and if Steve calls in on time, and I'm sure he will, from DemocraticTalkRadio.com. Steve puts out some awfully good writing, and we're going to talk about a piece he recently did about how the Republicans ought to be fighting this war. If they're so damn happy with it, they should be fighting this war. So hopefully right after the break, Steve will be with us. And he's supposed to call me. I'm not going to call him today. So we'll see that hopefully it works out okay. There has been a little bit of technical problems, not with us, but with the news today. So we shall see what happens with them at the top of the hour, okay? Hope they're there. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Network. The gunman in yesterday's mass murder rampage at the Virginia Tech campus, which killed 33 people, including the shooter, has been identified. He is 23-year-old Cho Sung-wi, a senior English major from South Korea. He was described as a loner who kept to himself and lived on campus in a dorm. A long note was found in his dorm room. He wrote, quote, "You caused me to do this," end quote. Authorities also found a receipt for a gun purchase less than a week ago. The other gun he used was bought in March. The director of the school's creative writing department described Sung-hui as troubled. Some of his writing for class was so disturbing that he was referred to a school counselor. President Bush ordered flags to be flown at half-staff to honor those killed at Virginia Tech. He and First Lady Laura Bush went to the campus in Blacksburg today for a memorial service. The president said, quote, "Those whose lives were taken did nothing to deserve their fate. They were simply in the wrong place at the wrong time." The Pentagon today announced new measures for the outpatient treatment of wounded soldiers and veterans. They will include more health screenings, improved record keeping, and a simplified disability claim system. The government was recently criticized for the poor treatment of veterans and the rundown condition of facilities such as Walter Reed Army Medical Center. The Senate Judiciary Committee hearings about the fired 8 prosecutors have been delayed because of the Virginia Tech tragedy. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who was scheduled to appear today, will now testify on Thursday. The mayor of Nagasaki, who was campaigning for a fourth term, was shot to death today. Police say the brazen attack was ordered by an organized crime chief. In exchange for his testimony, the U.S. Marine Corps has dropped all charges against one of the 8 Marines who was accused of murdering civilians in Haditha, Iraq in 2005. Chinese state media reported today that a, quote, huge amount of sulfur dioxide was discharged from a fertilizer plant in southwest China. About 140 children and teachers were sickened by the chemical. The environmental group Greenpeace accuses China of illegally importing a threatened tropical hardwood from Southeast Asia by mislabeling it. China needs a wood supply for its booming furniture industry. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The Northeast is confronting the aftermath of the powerful nor'easter that hit a wide area from Maine to South Carolina Sunday and Monday. The storm is blamed for at least 17 deaths across the nation. Today is tax day because the 15th fell over the weekend and yesterday was a holiday in the District of Columbia. The National Taxpayers Union says on average Americans spend just over 24 hours keeping records and preparing their taxes. The Commerce Department reported that in March, housing starts were up 0.8%. In March, consumer inflation increased by the largest amount in close to a year. The nation's largest home improvement retailer, Home Depot, will place labels on 3,000 products that promote energy conservation and a cleaner environment. The Energy Department reports that gasoline prices were up 10.6% last month. The nationwide average now for a gallon of unleaded gasoline is $2.88. And Forbes.com has compiled a list of the greenest vehicles for 2007, topping the list tied for first place, the Toyota Prius and the Honda Civic Hybrid. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $63.10 a barrel, and near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow is in near record territory, up 52 points at 12,772, NASDAQ down 1, S&P 500 up 3. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
We'll be right back.
not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, you better believe it, all that's left is the truth. Welcome back to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Of course, you can participate in the program as always, 866-546-5254. And as promised, we've got our old cyber friend. I haven't talked to him in a long time. From DemocraticTalkRadio.com, Steve Crockett. Steve, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Glad to have you along with us this afternoon.
It's a pleasure to be on the air with Florida's greatest talker.
Hey, you're up in Maryland now, right?
Yes, sir.
You've got quite a bit of radio experience yourself, right?
Well, yeah. We've been doing this for about 6 years. I've done a few gigs between now. My co-host is actually much more experience in radio than I am. I'm kind of the guy with the political background.
So you're the brains behind the deal.
Well, I don't know. I was a pretty bright guy.
One would think from your writing that you do have a lot of brains. I always read each and every one of your articles when they come out. And by the way, everybody, that's at DemocraticTalkRadio.com. And Steve's got an archive up there of his writings, and he's a great writer. And Steve, the reason I wanted to have you on today, I took particular interest in this latest one of yours about how the only Republicans should fight in Iraq.
Yeah, I believe it's called Surge in Iraq with Republicans.
Yeah. Interesting point of view. You want to explain it to our listeners? I found it fascinating.
Well, you know, the basic premise of the whole article is that the Republicans are the only ones who are really benefiting from the war. The Republican politicians are benefiting from it politically. They used it to great advantage in 2002 and 2004, challenging the patriotism of Democrats and other candidates who ran against them. And, you know, their corporate sponsors are raking in tons of money from this war. It is working class and poor folks who are primarily fighting the war, and that's primarily Democrats and non-Republicans and non-voters, many of them. We're doing all the sacrificing on the war effort, and the Republicans are doing almost none. I mean, there are a few guys in the military who are fighting, but the leadership of the party, the top guys, they're doing nothing. They're giving tax cuts to the wealthy. Traditionally through history, when the United States goes to war, the wealthy have never really been known to be ground soldiers. You know, they're not in the front lines fighting. But traditionally, they've paid higher taxes to help fund the war effort.
And this is the first time we've ever had a deep tax cut during a war.
That I know of in history, that's true. And it's even worse. The tax cuts gave them extra money so that they can loan it back to the government interest. So not only are they're profiting from the debt and they're profiting from the war.
Well, you mentioned that the so-called war on terror is mislabeled. Well, what do you mean by that, Steve?
Well, first of all, terror is an emotion. Okay, terrorism is a tactic, and you can't have a war on an emotion or a tactic. I mean, that doesn't make sense. We should have had a war with bin Laden's organization. They're the ones behind 9/11. You know, I'm assuming that the 9/11 attacks were conducted by Al-Qaeda. I know a lot of people believe differently. But there's nothing in the Iraq adventure that has anything to do with terrorism. It's about oil. This is an oil war.
You know? And it's just completely one-sided right now. Like you said, one side's reaping all the profits, and the other side's paying all the freight.
Well, you know, American working class and poor folks are not and middle-class guys are not the only ones paying the cost. Our generations to follow are paying the cost because it's being funded with debt. Well, they're going to be paying the cost with losses and privileges. And, of course, we can't forget what happens to all those poor Iraqi civilians.
No, exactly. We were mentioned on the program today about the horrible tragedy in Blacksburg, but that's commonplace in Baghdad. Every day they have that many people die. That's not to take anything away from the tragedy here, but
I was particularly horrified. I've been on Virginia Tech at least 200 times.
Yeah.
I run a college marketing company for years, and I was there just a couple years ago speaking to the college Democrats. It's a beautiful campus. It's a wonderful environment, and that's a real tragedy.
It certainly is. You mentioned in your article, Steve, I'm jumping around a little bit, but I love the part you said where we should immediately draft every member of the college Republicans, every member of the young Republicans, and the children or grandchildren of the Republican politicians. Now, Junior Bush has been complaining about us putting timelines on this whole thing, and that's why he's going to veto this bill, that and the pork that's in it. How much longer would it take to get a timeline on this if we did immediately what you said? I don't think the word lasts a lot longer, do you?
Well, I don't think we would make it till they got into basic.
Yeah.
honestly, I don't see the Bush girls being pushed indefinitely to combat in Iraq. If that was going to happen, we'd be out of there tomorrow.
Well, I think we can see from the services, the various branches having trouble getting their quotas met, and now them having to extend the deployment of each and everybody in Iraq, that we're not exactly having any kind of a military epiphany going on in this country right now. We're having a groundswell of people saying, oh, let's join the military and fight for old glory. It's just not happening.
Right. And if we were in a war that had popular support, there wouldn't be a need to worry about this. But, when you fight a war that's against the wishes of the majority of the American people, how can you expect them to get enough volunteers to fight it? And you don't, let's face it, these Republican leaders who sent these boys to war are no heroes. They're cowards. Now, the boys that are there and young ladies who are there fighting, they are heroes. Even if you don't believe in the war, you have to believe in those soldiers. But, the war was never wise. It was never justified to fight it. And it was never going to have a good outcome.
I think that was apparent from the very beginning. Before the thing ever started, we had people like Muhammad al-Baradei and Scott Ritter on the program telling us exactly what the story was there, and nobody wanted to believe it at the time.
And it, just logically, it doesn't take a lot of knowledge. It just takes a little bit of common sense to realize that if you put in a foreign military to occupy a nation, and they don't speak the same language, and they're not from the same racial or historical background, and they don't practice the same religion, they're not going to be well accepted to stay on a long-term basis.
No, and
that was just a crazy idea. I think all these guys among the Bush Republicans smelt money, and they are quite willing to sacrifice other people's blood for that money.
Well, it's been very successful for them in that regard, no question about it. Steve, how often do you put a new column up?
Well, I try to put up one about one a week, although sometimes we'll get two or three out in a week and then none for a couple of weeks. I do work for a living, and all my political stuff, Democratic Talk Radio and all the columns and everything else I do, I've never taken a dime for any of it.
Well,
it costs me a great deal of money, but here's the question, what's it worth to live in a free country?
Yeah, somebody's got to do it. That's right. Not enough people doing it, Steve. Not nearly
enough.
Well,
the answer is everything.
Yeah.
And you know that.
That's right.
That's what you're putting into your program.
Yep, that's exactly right. Steve, thanks so much for being on the program. Again, the site's Democrat Talk Radio, DemocraticTalkRadio.com, right?
Yes, sir.
And we invite everybody to head on over there and keep track
of
your comments.
Good work, guy.
Thanks, Steve. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now. Steve Crockett. And Steve's a very fine writer, and you will find that. If you go over to DemocraticTalkRadio.com, you will see just exactly what I'm talking about on there. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back in just a moment or two. There's a song that called Strange Times, and it most certainly is.
Of time, back when the crystal there's a world so strange and so beautiful, all life would flourish and would grow. Years ran by, time just fell away, love was worshipped like the sun. Wastelands that live before the snow. Time stands still as we race through the universe on our way to the sun.
Sentimos mutuo amor profundo y con eso ya ganamos lo más grande de este mundo. Nos amamos, nos besamos. Como novios nos deseamos y hasta veces, sin motivos y razón, nos enojamos.
Somos novios.
Recordar de qué color son los besos, sin hacer más comentarios, somos novios.
Oscuro.
hacer más comentarios. Somos novios.
Somos novios.
Siempre novios. Somos novios.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century, and how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that it's sovereignty. It's, you've been given sovereignty, and you're viewed as a sovereign entity, and therefore the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Hey, that's right. If you're sovereign and sovereignty, that means that you were sovereign and therefore, what he said. He had it exactly right, I think. Junior's been working on that one for a while. Hey, welcome back to the Guy James Show. Andrea Bocelli and Catherine McPhee there on that song. I had a kind of a request for that, so I thought a lot of you'd like to hear it. Hey, let's go to the phones, and you can join us on the phone, 866-546-5254. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Susan in Columbia City.
Hi there.
I just ran across something on the blogosphere that is just making me crazy. The Freepers are claiming that the Virginia Tech shooting is because, and this is a direct quote, a culture that allows the killing of the unborn, the more we will see people treating life in general as, quote, cheap.
Oh, they got all the answers, don't they?
Yeah. Now, I don't know about you, but killing a million or so Iraqis, that's what I'd call treating life cheap.
Real cheap. Worthless, as a matter of fact.
Now, the college was tragic, but killing all of those people in Iraq for oil?
Exactly.
Come on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I want to hit something. I know.
I understand. it's frustrating when you're hearing this and you're starting to hear these little debates pop up on TV. I looked around today over at Fox and some of the other networks, and oh yeah, this Hollywood culture and blah 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 blah, blah, all these things that caused this. Hey, this was the work of a crazy man.
Yeah, and they're saying it's naturalism, AKA atheism, and so. Oh, give me a break.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing to hear that. It really is.
The guy who did this was a nut, and that's all it was.
That's all it is. It's not preventable. There's nothing you can do about it. It's not indicative of the broad range of our society. It's an aberration. It happened. We grieve. We mourn. We'll have to get over it.
Yeah.
That's all
anyway,
I can say.
That's basically all I wanted to say.
Well, thanks for doing the dirty work and checking on the Freepers for us. I don't like to do that because I have to take a shower afterwards, you know. And
actually, it was Cossack who passed it on to me.
Okay. Well, he did the dirty work.
He's going to have to go take a shower.
Somebody's got to do the grunt work. That's right. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
You have a nice day, Guy.
Bye-bye. Larry Johnson. We had Larry on the phone earlier. This afternoon, and Larry put out a piece on his website. And let me just read it to you. I mean, we had Larry on a program here just very recently. He said, breaking news, at least, and then it talked about the students being killed. He said, okay, big deep breath. This is horrible, and this is tragic, and this gives us an idea of what it's like to live just one day in Iraq. Consider the following. 4:15:07, according to Reuters, 19 bodies found in Baghdad on Saturday. Police found the bodies of 19 people in various parts of Baghdad in the past 24 hours. 4:15:07, Reuters. 20 Iraqi police and troops abducted. A group linked to Al-Qaeda said it abducted 20 Iraqi troops and policemen and demanded the release of all Sunni women held in Iraqi prison. 41507, Reuters. Four killed by suicide bombers in Mosul. Four people, including two Iraqi soldiers, were killed and 16 wounded when two oil trucks driven by suicide bombers explode outside a military base in Mosul. 415, this is all on 415. 41507, suicide bomber kills five in northwest Baghdad, wounds 11. 41507, 37 die as car bomb hits near Iraq shrine. At one of Iraq's holiest shrines. Larry goes on to say, the next time you hear Dick Cheney or George Bush blame the public attitude regarding Iraq on the media's failure to report good news, examine carefully our reaction to the shooting at Virginia Tech. Look at our collective shock, our horrified reaction, the public sorrow, yet in truth, this is an exceptional, unusual day in America. It is not our common experience, but we cannot say the same about Iraq. People of Iraq are living in a Marquis de Sade version of Groundhog Day. It's like the Bill Murray movie, the same horrible day repeated with some new bizarre twist, only not funny. Multiple body counts and explosions and shootings are the daily experience of the people of Iraq, and they've been living this hell for 4 years. Just keep that fact in mind as you mourn the deaths of 22 American students slain in Blacksburg, Virginia. Right you are, Larry, as always. The U.S. doesn't give a damn about Iraq. And I'm talking about the people, of course. I've maintained all along that the U.S. really couldn't care less if the Iraqis slaughter each other down to the last man. We never went there to install democracy, despite the insistence otherwise, any more than we went there to topple Saddam Hussein or to rid ourselves of those non-existent WMDs. We went to Iraq for two reasons. The very same reasons why Junior Bush and that criminal posse of his have been so intent on trying to dismantle the U.S. Constitution right in front of our eyes, creating a one-party authoritarian, if you will, state, and installing their litmus-tested loyal cronies throughout the executive branch, and we're seeing that in the judicial branch. With these U.S. attorneys, power and money. The power is represented by an attempt to seize Middle East influence, and the money is represented by what else? Oil. Both of those reasons are also why the Bush administration will never leave Iraq, and it's also why, and I'm sad to say this, I believe it's also why it's very likely that even if the Democrats take the White House in 2008, they'll find a way to stay in Iraq as well. It just might not look like a full-tilt war. Nobody, Democrats or Republicans, will be dismantling those permanent bases or tearing down the new Green Zone U.S. Embassy. If the leadership of our country has their way, and it looks like they will, we'll be in Iraq forever. I believe that. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
What you just said, I hope it wasn't so.
Well, I hope so, too, but I wonder.
I tell you, those people, what have they... haven't done anything to deserve what's happened to them. Can I say a couple of things about the two guests you had? They were really great.
Yes.
The last one, I totally agree. I mean, they should fight it. The people who are for it should be fighting it. And...
Well, but we wouldn't have anybody to fight it, Juanita. There wouldn't be anybody to fight the war. You know that.
That would be good.
It, wouldn't it, though?
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know what to say about them. But the first one, he was talking about the military and how they're forcing kids to be Christians, which you can't, you don't do that. God, my understanding of God is he gives us free will. And he doesn't do that to us. And they don't have a right to do it to them. That is not Christianity. That is not the right thing, you know. And as far as, you know, they've got like 150 people from the Regency University in our government.
Yeah, Pat Robertson's university.
Yeah.
150 of them. It's an amazing number.
I remember when I was in that, I tried to conform, you know. And I tried to be a conservative. I tried, but my heart never was in it. But I was told, you know, well, go to hell if you know if you are liberal, you'll go to hell. And I kind of believed it for a while. But anyway, I just wanted to say that God does not, that is not God. And it's, you can't, there's an old saying is about, just because you silenced me does not mean you changed my opinion. And you can make somebody act like they're believing you if they're scared enough or whatever, but that doesn't mean they do.
That's right.
Another thing, too, about this teaching evolution and creationism in school, what they're not thinking about is whose version of creationism are they going to teach? Because basically all the belief systems of the different denominations have a different version. They interpret it different.
Sure.
So how are you going to do that?
Another fight. And that one will last a while as well. I don't know if reasonable minds will ever agree on that. I certainly hope so some of these days.
Yeah. But it's it is a tragedy today, but the, like you said, they're really smearing it all over the news, and they're not saying enough about the war.
Well, it's a sad diversion from the war.
It sure is.
A lot of people
is.
Will forget about it for a while, and sooner or later the... the focus will come back to it, but I certainly hope and feel we haven't heard yet about the parents and the families of all these people that were killed at Virginia Tech.
Oh, I know.
It's
I know.
Starting to hear from a few of the students.
Can I just tell you one more thing?
Yes.
You probably laugh at me, but I've become a fan of The View since Rosie's on there.
Oh, I don't know a lot about it, really.
Well, you know... they got that other girl on there, the little blonde, and I call her the boop, 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 boop. She gets all her little right-wing points in. And today they were talking about the shooting, and then all of a sudden she comes up with, what did you think about John Edwards getting a $400 haircut? I mean, just all of a sudden bringing that up.
No.
And she does those things. And it's never about... a Democrat. It's always about. But what about how much Bush pays for all his clothes?
Yeah,
$3,000 suit.
Oh yeah, but
$1,000 boots.
All the news that's going on, and she brings up about John Edwards getting.
Yeah, she brought that up.
Oh boy.
And I don't know whether it's so or not, but she said my husband pays $7, and
$7 in New York. Yeah,
that's what she said.
I like to find where that place is.
But I call her the beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, well, that's what she is. She's
interrupting
dizzy.
Things.
She's dizzy. Hey, thanks for your call,
okay,
Anita. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
John Edwards, $400 haircut. That's be the subject of, I can't believe anybody bring it up. Thursday, are you looking forward to Thursday? Let's get away from the tragedy for a minute. It'll be surrounding us for a long time, and let's talk about some happy things, like the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings that's going to take place on Thursday, and Alberto Gonzalez is going to be there. Have you been able to watch this Dana Perino, who's taken over for Tony Snow while he's gone? I just am having a hard time with her. It's inconceivable to me that she would be the deputy press secretary at the White House. I mean, let's face it, Snow's good. He's really good at spin, and, you know, he's a smart guy, and he won't answer questions directly. I mean, he's not a diz, regardless of how much you may dislike him. And I don't like the guy at all. I don't like his style. I don't like, but he's perfect for this White House. Great spinner. Great at avoiding answering questions, and that's what those people do the best. But this Dana Perino, she gets herself cornered one day after another after another. And she suggested the other day that contrary to every statement made by the administration on the subject, that Bush was... Well, we know that Bush, and we're seeing evidence now that Bush was involved in this firing of David Iglesias. There's evidence to suggest that now. And specifically, the Albuquerque Journal has now reported that Senator Pete Domenici was told by Alberto Gonzalez that he would fire Iglesias only if ordered to by President Bush. And then the firing came after Domenici spoke to Bush on the phone. Now you tell me, did George Bush have a hand in that or not? And at the news conference, press conference with Dana Perino, somebody asked the question, does the president not remember having a phone conversation with Senator Domenici about U.S. Attorney Iglesias? Or is he clear that one did not take place? And Ms. Perino said, I've never asked him that question. I do know, now she said, I never asked him that question. I do know that his vague recollection was that he had heard complaints. And I'll refer you to his statement or his answer to a question that he got in Mexico in which he was asked that question and said that he recalls being at a meeting on the Hill in which the issue was brought up, a meeting of senators on the Hill in which it was brought up. But I've never heard anything about a phone call. And I'll get to the phone here in just a minute. Hang on if you're on the phone. So there's another question that says, so he's never actually answered the question. And Ms. Perino said, he answered the question, and I don't know anything about a phone call. I've never heard that except for questions from you all. And the question again is, you mean the phone call? And Ms. Perino says, I don't know that the president ever received a phone call. I don't have any record of that or any recollection of it. There's a word you're going to hear a lot, recollection. And I've been dealing with the issue for many weeks. And so the questioner at the press conference once again says, when he was at the meeting on the Hill, when it was brought up, it was Senator Domenici. And she said, I don't think people remember necessarily who it was and remember complaints about voter fraud cases were coming in from various places. And so the questioner says, right, just to be clear about this then, Senator Domenici and the president, has there ever been a direct conversation between the two? And she said, I don't know. I don't believe so necessarily about this particular issue. But remember when the president sees members of Congress all the time. And as I think I said last week, whenever a senator has the president's ear, whether this issue, whether the topic of the meeting is the Iraq War supplemental, if they have a chance to talk about other issues, they will. And so I'm not going to rule it out. But I can't say that Senator Domenici and the president ever had a one-on-one conversation about it. So just to recap that whole conversation, I never actually asked. So he never actually told me, which is why I think, I sincerely believe that the phone call never happened, though, of course, it might have. Oh, man. Talk about a diz in front of that microphone. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Is this the real Guy James Show?
The one and only, yes, sir.
This is Eric from Vermont. How you doing?
Hi, Eric.
Oh, wow. I haven't been listening to your show because I can't. We have 50 degrees up here in Vermont. We had a major wind kind of storm up here, and we got power out all over the place. So I apologize for not being able to keep up what you're doing. However, Perino, yes, I think I've seen some of the research before my internet went out. And it sounds like a Abbott Costello, who's on first and what's on second, and I don't know who's on third. Personally, I do give a damn. And it does seem like that's all the answers they ever want to give. I mean, oh, I don't remember, I don't recollect. Well, we might have gotten a phone call, but, you know, I mean, it's a possibility. But then again, I don't really have any definite information about that. Well, What kind of records do they keep if they don't have that information available? Or maybe is it really true sarcasm on that they don't really want to share that information?
Well, did you have you heard or read any of Gonzalez's testimony that he's going to give? He released the transcript of it.
Sure, we've been out of power since yesterday morning.
Well, in it,
I haven't had a chance.
One of the cute phrases he's going to use in his speech in front of the Congress's opening statement is, "I realize I was somewhat imprecise with some of my answers. I don't know." Isn't that called lying in most circles?
Well, I mean, where do you get away from imprecise and then say, listen, that wasn't true, Al. This is what happened. You know that that's what happened. What do you mean imprecise? I mean, that's like, it doesn't mean anything. It's a wishy-washy answer, and it has no definition to it. I mean, if you don't really know anything more than that, maybe you're not qualified to be attorney general. I still can't figure out why those guys let him go through. Anyway, I guess Spector had a lot of help on that.
I was shocked that they let him through, that they let him through with such glowing recommendations. He was never any more than a lackey for George Bush. He was never attorney general material, never.
Yeah, and then we have all the attorneys from Regent University, Tier 4 Regent University. That's really interesting.
Man, they're hauling them to Washington by the busload, 150 of them. That's an incredible number.
And even Vermont Law School in South Royalton, Vermont is a Tier 3 for crying out loud. I mean, this is a Tier 4 from Pat Robertson, and these guys are like, hey, hello. I mean, what other law school has such a high percentage of attorneys in it than Regent University? Maybe there are some, but my goodness gracious, for a Tier 4... Doesn't seem like they're looking for the best and the brightest.
I'd like to know if somebody could tell me. I'd like to compare it to how many are there from Harvard Law School as compared to the 150, and especially in relation to the size of the two universities. I'd like to know that. I bet we might be shocked by the answer. Oh,
I don't think we'd be shocked at all. I mean, it's not the Kennedy going for the brightest people. They're going for the guys that are just going to say, okay, rubber stamp that. That's not good. Is that what the president wants? They work at the pleasure of the president. And whatever the pleasure of the president or the shadow president, Cheney, or the shadow whatever they have in D.C. now for federal government, we don't know anymore.
And the way they scorn, you know, you're exactly right. And they scorn the elite. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in any profession, I would like to maybe have the elite of that profession running the show. I would like to have the best lawyer. I'd like to have the best financial advisor as Secretary of the Treasury. But this administration, they like the good old boys. They've stocked up on Regent University and that kind of people, and they have scorn for the elite. And frankly, I'm comfortable with some of the elite. I want the best.
Well, I guess it would be a bit easier if I was a dictator.
yeah.
You know, I mean, hello. I mean, that's exactly what they're doing. They're not putting the big brightest in there. They get rid of them all. I mean, you repeat it so many times on your show, as so many of your listeners already know, going into Iraq. I mean, what did they do with the generals that said, no, this is what you got to do, more troops here, this, that, and the other thing in terms of recommendations based upon being the brightest in the military at that time? And they said, no, we can't put up with that. You're going to get forced out. Get rid of those guys. They don't even have those guys.
Yeah, you
still don't like the idea of going in there. But the fact of the matter is, anybody that was giving them any intelligent information about, you know, if you're going to do such a stupid thing, this is the way you got to do it.
You conjure up images when the whole thing started of Donald Rumsfeld and a bottle of wine and a chessboard and one of those pointers like you saw, sitting there moving troops around. So, yeah, let's put some over here, let's put some over here. But, Don, you don't know anything about them. Ah, hell, we're going to walk over them anyway. Don't worry about it. I mean, I think that was the kind of carelessness they actually used in this whole adventure.
Well, I'm still wondering what the heck they're doing with Afghanistan. I mean, heck, I thought we were supposed to go in after Bin Laden. They did a documentary Sunday night when I actually had power up here, and it was really a very well done documentary. McNeil thing, I think.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good.
I don't know if you saw. You did see it then?
Yes, I did.
And my goodness gracious, they knew who all the stuff was. Now you listen to the news, the Taliban's back on the watch again. I mean, it's like the American people can't figure out, well, geez, I thought we were supposed to go after this guy with Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Now the Taliban's coming back up on step, you know, and now we're in Iraq, and that's a fiasco, and we got to stay there until the mission's done. Well, what is the definition of the mission? I mean, is it the Iraq study group even? In the Iraq study group, I do think they make some sort of reference, you know, later down the line in the recommendation list that they would like to have control of the oil still. So, I mean, Bush isn't even following that thing, and no. They're still going after the oil. I mean, it's, hello! Dumb.
Someday.
I hope. Yeah, God willing.
Hey, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Yeah. I'm sorry I can't listen to your show.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye now. We'll be back in a minute. Don't go away.
seem to you, friend, that I ain't got no pity for you. Well, that ain't true. You see, I lost my, lost my, lost my.
I'd help another place another time. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. You've got your troubles, I've got mine.
Hey, still plenty of time for you to call in the Guy James Show today, 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5452. Glad to have you call in today. We always appreciate your input into the program. Want to say hi to Benny and Elo and Frozen Noel, and Juanita and Powerpuff, Texas Betsy, all the people over in the chat room. And all you folks over at iTunes and Democrats.com and Democratic Underground and all of our favorite websites, thanks for being here today. Let's head on over to the phone, by the way. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hiya, Bill.
How you doing today?
Okay, I understand it's not snowing there today.
No, it's almost 60 degrees, hard to believe.
There you go.
Hey, listen, you know, I must live a hell of a life. It's terrible, Guy. You said, is anybody out there interested in this hearing coming up on the 19th? Be there or be square.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm probably the only person that's listened to that.
You want butter on your popcorn?
Oh, God, we're having a big blowout. This is going to be a box party, my God. But he said, is anybody interested? I'm probably the only person that's listen to that Kyle Simpson's testimony about five times. And, you know, that's only 5 hours and 9 minutes. That's pretty close to over a day's worth of listening to that. Because, like, I'll go to bed at, like, 10 or 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock, whatever. And I'll put that on the computer. And sometimes what's nice about it is you can take and run it for about 3 hours. And it just puts you to sleep, but then you'll wake up, and then you'll get to a good part on it, and then you're up for about 2 hours, and you still don't finish it.
I should come on up there at the Toledo Airport, Toledo, what do they call it, down there at the south end of town, southwest end.
I would meet you there.
And we'll go down to Tony Paco's.
Oh, yeah.
And throw down a few dogs.
All you got to do is call me.
Ah, Tony Paco, that sounds good.
Listen, I'll tell you what, that's Samson. I think he hung himself so many times on, I don't know. Well, I really can't recall this.
Oh, yeah.
And I got this little door on the right side of my desk, and I put my papers in there, but I really don't have a file on none of that. This is going to be so interesting.
Yeah, I think you're
this
right.
This should last all through the summer, Guy.
Yeah. Maybe it will.
I really believe it is. I'm so interested in this. This is the first chink in their armor. And I think by the time this thing's going to come out, it's going to be like a cannonball coming out the other side of the armor.
Well, I hope so. We need to clear the air a little bit.
We sure do.
Sweep the place out a bit.
Well, I just thought I'd give you a call today and say, yeah, there is somebody out there interested.
Hey, have a dog for me.
Okay.
So long, Bill.
Care yourself.
Let's go here to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Good afternoon, Guy. This is John from Fort Myers.
Hi, John.
Something I wanted to call you about last week, but I never got a chance, and I apologize to everybody because this is going back 1 week in the news cycle. But it was something that I my jaw dropped. I was watching television. Of course, they had the coverage of the IMUS thing that was nonstop, and they had this panel on one of the cable channels. It might have been CNN. Talking about this, and one of them happened to be Armstrong Williams. And I looked and I saw that guy and I thought, when did he revive his credibility?
Oh, they all do.
That was just 2 years ago the scandal broke. Now, he goes from accepting money from the Bush administration to write favorable articles, thus, as far as I'm concerned, giving up his legitimate journalist credentials for life.
Yeah.
And 2 years later, now he's an impaneled expert on matters of race. How did that happen?
He is indeed. I mean, he is. You're exactly right. He is the expert.
I was appalled. Well, first of all, I mean, it's bad enough Al Sharpton, who has no credibility whatsoever, being. And that's of course that's a gripe I've had with the Democratic Party, giving him a seat at the table when there are, I mean, if you know, there are plenty of civic leaders out there, people of color who have done substantive things and could be given a seat at the table and be sitting in the same box with the Clintons. Why Al Sharpton?
Yeah.
What has he done other than perpetuate lies and stereotypes? Get himself. I mean, he's a self promotion machine.
He has been all of that. He's got a snappy tongue and is good with the sound bite and all that. But I agree with you about the credibility. He was not the guy I wanted to hear leading the charge last week.
Well, I wanted to bring that up, and you know, some of them were current. Of course, given what happened yesterday in Blacksburg, now it's revived the gun control debate. And my entire life that this gun control debate has been going on, it has been framed on both sides by the extremes. You know, what you hear in the media is either the Wayne LaPierre notion of no gun control whatsoever, all gun control is bad, to ban all guns or ban all handguns or something extreme. And most of us, I mean, I'm not, my dad tried to make a hunter out of me. It was a failure. I don't own any guns. I've got no particular affinity for guns. And yet at the same time, you know, it offends me to hear any politician or any person who is a policymaker or in the public forum talk about restricting all handguns.
Yeah.
Or restricting all guns, or you know, complete ban on guns. You know, that may be workable within the confines of certain cities. But
well,
I'm here,
as always, the extremes and are the ones that end up fighting it out. We know,
and most all of us are somewhere between those two.
Yeah, and on a wide range of issues as well. Hey, John, I got to run. We're coming up to the top of the hour. Thanks so much for calling. Good to hear from you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the way it always is? We, the extremes end up fighting it out, from extremes from both sides, and it leaves people not able to settle things so many times in the way that they ought to be settled. I don't know. Far be it from me to come up with the answers, but we try every day here on the show, along with you. Always great to hear your input. I thank all the fine callers we had today and all of you that sent all the great email. My, we got a slug of email today to go through here. My goodness, that's going to take me a while. We do our best to answer it when as much of it as we can, and we thank you for sending it and your ideas and those of you who forward news items and so forth. We do appreciate it, and I hope you understand if we can't answer each and every one of them, but we try. We try and get around to all of you sooner or later. Hey, thanks so much for being with us here today on The Guy James Show. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.